You know, we talk a lot about UFOs on this program. Up next, we'll be talking about UFO encounters, how high strange events transform human perception. It's an amazing story. Angelina Scheer with us, and she has been a MUFON investigator for 35-plus years. We'll be back with her in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Let me tell you about Angelina Scheer, has been investigating the UFO mystery for 35-plus years. She founded Parascheer Research, her private research group, and is also a current state director, chief field investigator, and star team lead for MUFON of Tennessee. Recently, Angelina was invited to join MUFON's Experiencers Research Team, an international group that investigates high strange events surrounding the UFO phenomena. And over the years, she has interviewed thousands of witnesses and has been fortunate enough to be present during some major UFO, paranormal, and high strangeness events as well. We'll talk about that. She's also a certified master hypnotherapist and uses her training to aid experiencers in dealing with their UFO missing time encounters. Here she is on Coast to Coast with her book, UFO Encounters, How Strange Events Transform Human Perception. Angelina, welcome to the program.
Hey, George. I really appreciate you having me on tonight.
I'm looking forward to this. So if you've been doing this for 35 years, what are you, about 37 now? You were 2 years old when you started?
That's exactly right, George. Maybe a little bit older.
Saw a UFO when you were a baby, didn't you?
Exactly.
Hey, tell me about some of these encounters you've had personally.
George, you know, I've been really, really lucky. I've had a team where I'll start out with this one. You know, I used to wonder, even though I've been into UFOs my whole life, you know, you get some of these reports in where people say they had these close encounters and they didn't get a picture. So I'll share one of my humbling experiences. It's probably been about 2.5 years ago. I had a young man send me a video, incredible video, George. I couldn't debunk it. It shows a classic UFO. You hear a dog barking and you hear the witness go, "Now that's not normal." So we put a team together. We drove over. It was over towards East Tennessee and set up all of our equipment, probably had a couple of $1,000 worth of equipment at our feet. And, George, sure enough, around 10:30, 10:40, this triangular craft comes over. And when I tell you it stopped over our head, just like it knew we were there. It was probably, I don't know, a couple of thousand feet. I had a pilot with me on my team, military pilot, had his own plane. And we all just stood there with our mouth open looking at this craft hovering over our head. It was so close we could see ambient white light around the edges of the craft. That's how close it was. It had to have some kind of anti-grav generators because the thing just hovered. And then after a couple of minutes, it just tootled on its way. And, George, do you think one of us took a picture? We stood there. We were supposed to be the professionals. To this day, Don, one of my co-investigators that was a pilot, was with me. I mean, for a month, he would call me every day and go, "Why didn't we get a picture?"
Oh, my gosh.
And of course, that goes into a million other stories, you know, where we, you know, people either forget the sighting, they don't talk about it, or they don't get a picture.
They're so excited about it that they do forget their camera or their smartphone.
Or they forget it's just sitting there. That's for sure.
What is your take on what's going on in Washington with the Pentagon, with the disclosure projects, with all these things? Something's happening, Angelina.
Well, George, you know, all of us true boots-on-the-ground investigators, I mean, you know, people such as myself and all my co-researchers, you know, we're the ones that have been sitting out in the cold for, you know, almost 40 years, you know, sitting with people that have been terrified, you know, seeing these things. And, you know, all of us are kind of smiling now because we've been saying all these years, you know, "We told you so." You know, George, I haven't interviewed as many people as you have, but probably I'm upwards to about 3,000. And when so many good people, you know, come forward and they have nowhere else to go over the years, you know something's going on.
Right.
And in so many radio shows and lectures here lately, you know, I said, "I'm a happy girl." You know, the attitude of the public is completely different. You know, 98% of the people I talk to, you know, are really open. They want to know about this. You know, they're educated. They know how big the universe is, and they think, "How could we be alone?" So I'm excited during this time. I feel like we're in the midst of soft disclosure. I'm going to just put it that way. I've never seen anything like this before. When you actually have the government coming forward, you know, saying, hey, we've, you know, been looking at this all along. And I remember a few years ago on Tucker Carlson when, you know, they actually had the pilot come on. That was unheard of for a military pilot to admit anything, much less...
And for a mainstream cable network to even acknowledge it.
Exactly, George, exactly. So, you know, we're all thrilled. I think, you know, we truly are in the midst of some kind of soft disclosure. I know I did a lecture not too long ago where even NASA a couple of years ago announced, you know, there's all these exoplanets they've discovered. And then they, you know, they just mentioned quietly, oh, yeah, and there's one of them that's just a lot like Earth. And that's all they said, subtle, but, you know, pretty much the implications of that, you know, full of life out there. So I'm really excited over the disclosures. All of us old boots on the ground people are happy. And for once, George, we kind of get to say, we told you so.
Well, you know, we're blessed because my weekend co-host and host, George Knapp, is by far the best investigative reporter for UFOs in the country. Nobody gets close to him. And he's seen all this unfold after years and years and years of doing interviews, scoffed at, laughed at, and everything else. But it's starting to make sense.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I love George's work, especially that's one of my favorite books, A Hunt for the Skinwalker. I remember reading that book and I couldn't put it down, but it, you know, it really resonates to all of us, you know, old hunters out here. I mean, even in my research, you know, you find early on if you're a true researcher as far as in the field, you know, we can get off into the high strange that, you know, I was raised by a college teacher, and you know, I was lucky because I was encouraged, and you know, he was pretty hard on me studying the sciences and you know, the scientific method, that kind of thing. And I remember when I was a young researcher, you know, I really tried to keep my research pure, George, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
None of this funny stuff. But the problem is, in 98% of my ongoing cases, the paranormal components were always there. And, you know, I want to define for the audience my definition of paranormal. It's not necessarily a ghost. It's just anything our science, you know, doesn't understand today. And over the years, you know, we had to include that. I said, you know, it's bad science to leave out those components in our research. So as time went by and years went by, just as George, you know, found in all his research, I bet 98% of my ongoing cases, that means individuals that are having, you know, ongoing phenomena, the paranormal components are always there.
Angelia, what does your gut tell you what's been happening? Are these coming from within the planet? Are they coming from other planetary systems, other universes? What do you think's happening?
Well, that's a really complex question. That's what my book goes into. You know, I think in our reality here, in our local, you know, galaxy here, of course, there's other life forms. But, you know, I had someone ask me that question not too long ago, what do you think's going on? And I said, well, if you take interdimensionals, extra-dimensionals, terrestrials, and you stir in, you know, spiritual components, you might have a small clue as to what's going on, because I don't think it's either or. I think it's probably a very complex phenomena and a little bit of everything. I kind of compare it to, you know, here just on Earth. You know, I think about all of the cultures, all the races, all, you know, the political agendas, cultural agendas. You know, if you just extrapolate that into probably an unlimited universe, you might open up your scope of view enough to kind of start to understand what could be happening here.
I've been a believer since my mother brought me home a book back in the 60s. Walter Sullivan, former New York Times science writer, is probably passed on by now, called We Are Not Alone. And it was about his theory that we're not alone in the universe. And then shortly thereafter, Look magazine did the interrupted journey about Barney and Betty Hill.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, all of that just pulled me in as a kid. And I would read books by Frank Edwards and people like that. And, you know, I came away at a young age convinced this universe is too vast for us to be alone. We're just not alone.
Well, absolutely. You know, you'll probably laugh. When I was a child, I was probably 5 or 6 years old. I'm going to date myself, and I loved to watch the original Star Trek. And, you know, some of us are just obsessed with this from the time we're young, and my mother would tell me, she'd come downstairs and find me crying, and she'd go, "Ange, why are you crying?" And I'd say, "I'm supposed to be there. I'm supposed to be on that
Oh.
video." And so from the time I was young, I just, you know, it's, I was just a different kid. I was, as you said, I was obsessed with this phenomenon. I knew it was true. And from the time, I probably read 3 books a week for, I don't know, years and years and years on, you know, on everything I could get my hands on. And then probably when I was about 18, 19 years old, I really started my field work, you know, talking to people. And it's just been the best education. And, you know, people, a lot of my witnesses say, "Ange, you're just, you know, tireless. You don't charge anybody anything. You just go after it." And I say, "Well, I do have one selfish component is, George, I really get to meet some of the coolest people around the world."
You do. And from really, all walks of life, too.
All walks of life. I sure do.
I love meeting the astronauts who are believers. I did not meet Gordon Cooper, of course, but I did meet Edgar Mitchell, stayed friends with him, God rest his soul. And he was Apollo 14, walked on the moon, and he was a staunch believer that we are being visited. And when an astronaut who's been on the moon tells you that, you got to believe him. You know what?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I met Edgar Mitchell years ago in Memphis. And do you know what we talked about, George? I was in my book, I mentioned that how I tied a lot of my research together in later years. I was a participant at the Monroe Institute for over 13 years. And Edgar Mitchell had gone to the Monroe Institute. And so we talked about a lot of aspects of consciousness. That's what my book ties into. So it was great to meet him and talk to him. I'll never forget that. And, you know, I was like, he was one of my heroes, as they say, you know, from a kid, you know, as I wanted to be on Star Trek. So, yeah. And, you know, every day I go, you know, I speak to people, as you said, in every walk of life that, you know, George, and you know this, most people have an experience of some kind or another. I always, you know, laugh that most people that are skeptics are just a person that hadn't had an experience yet. So
exactly. And the Monroe Institute, of course, named after the late Robert Monroe, who could out of body anytime he wanted. He was absolutely incredible, Angelia.
He was, and I can't say enough. There's, you know, in the chapters of my book, we'll tie that in. You know, as I was researching my witnesses over the years, and we had all these high strange components come in and paranormal components, I'm a longtime meditator, and I found his books years ago, George, and read them all and was fascinated with them and decided to go off to the Monroe Institute. And it's, those were two different trajectories in my life. I had not tied those together. But after studying there for so many years, so many of the experiences that participants from all over the world were experiencing were very similar to what my witnesses were experiencing. And, you know, you have that epiphany, that aha moment where I realized, oh, my God, there's a huge connection here. And, George, a connection that really brought open a lot of answers. You know, people are always searching there, you know, what is this paranormal component? How does it, you know, bring everything together? And I'm convinced, you know, after so much research with real witnesses, that the least studied aspect of the UFO high strange phenomena is the witness and the human being themselves.
We're going to talk about some of your high strangeness cases in just a moment, Angelia. Mm-hmm. They are fascinating indeed. But tell us about your research group, Perisher.
Well, Perisher, you know, George, with MUFON, I was asked to come on some years ago, and I'm the state director, and, you know, MUFON, we stick strictly with the UFO phenomena. But years ago, you know, George, I'm pretty bullheaded, you know, I want to study what I want to study. And so when I created Perisher Research, that's why I did that. If I want to go out with a group of, you know, Bigfoot hunters, cryptids, UFOs, any kind of paranormal event, because they do all tie together. That's why I created Perisher Research, because it could handle any type of research that I, you know, am obsessed or fascinated with at the moment. So I handle all different types of sightings and encounters with Perisher.
Have you ever been scared doing any of your investigations?
Well, one of the cases, I love this story. Probably about, let's see here, I lose track of time, probably almost 3 years ago, I had another young man send me a video. People can see it on my Facebook page on Perisher Research. I believe it's a video called Transforming Lights. And George, it was really incredible. This little family, they had had these really strange lights in their woods. They lived in a rural area. And he bought a real inexpensive game camera, put it out on the tree, and he captured this video. And I put it through everything I had, couldn't debunk it in any way. And the video shows this rod of light. And you watch it carefully, it comes down, and when it touches the ground, George, it turns into this small entity. I mean, you can see clear as day, it's not manipulated. And the entity walks across the ground, walks around, then it walks behind the tree. And a few seconds later, George, an orb of light, bright. I mean, it's, you can't miss it. And I was so taken with this video, I put the team together. And, you know, people don't realize what that entails. You know, it's a day of charging and packing, you know, and we have pickup trucks and four-wheelers and FLIR cameras and everything else. So we got the team together. Everyone has to take a day off from work. And we drove over to this spot, and it was interesting. It's mentioned in my book. People can read about it. But there were two actual spots in this location where events happen. I call it location one and two. Location two was near a bridge and estuary. The first thing that happened, we went over. That was a great day, 70 degrees, you know, fair weather, no wind, no storms, no weather events. And we have a drone, which I love, high-res cameras, you know, auto-stabilizes in the wind, that kind of thing. And in this waterway, they had seen all these anomalous lights. So we sent the drone out down over this waterway, and immediately we started getting errors. We could visually see the drone, but we were getting auto-collision. Well, George, there was nothing there. And then the thing, I'd never seen the error on the drone. It said electromagnetic interference. We had never even seen that error come back. And it was just to the skill of my drone master, Josh Cross, who's my assistant state director. He was able to retrieve it, or we would have lost some, you know, good equipment. But we had all kinds of compass irregularities around there, magnetic field anomalies. And back in the 50s, I write about this, a military craft actually crashed in that area. They were actually lost, it seems.
Jeez.
But anyway, to get back to the main story, we were there in the afternoon, and as it darkness approached, we went back to the primary location where the video that I told you about was captured. So, you know, we set up all of our cameras, and I love my FLIR camera, George. I just love it. I'm a strange woman. My husband, he gives me, you know, new pieces of equipment for Christmas and birthdays, and I'm thrilled.
So, you don't want a purse, you want equipment,
no,
right?
No, I want equipment, you know. So we set up the FLIR cameras in the same general area where the game camera was mounted. And I tell you what, George, it wasn't, I've been blessed in my research, it wasn't a half hour that an entity showed up on the FLIR camera. It was out of the visual spectrum. We could not see it with our eyes. And, George, the thing was signaling to us. It was clearly, I have a picture of it. It's up on one of my sites. I said, I'll be buried with that picture. It's one of the best ones. It's clear. You can see the head, the arms, the face. And the thing was, you know, like waving at us, signaling.
Jeez.
I'll never forget, Josh, I was thrilled, of course, but, you know, I'm hardened. I've been on these things for a long time. I'll never forget the look on his face. It was one of his first investigations, and he wasn't frightened, but we were all pretty startled. I mean, you know, when that kind of event happens, it's so rare. It's what you wait for years.
Yeah,
and
it just hits you. Bang.
It hits you that, you know, here's this, it was a sentient entity, whatever it was, and we didn't feel threatened. You know, we've all been out in the field for years and years, so you trust your gut about things. You know, I tell people you need to know the difference between a rattlesnake and a puppy dog. But once you kind of get a sense of that, you know, we're standing there. Josh looks at me and he goes,
that's fantastic.
What do we do now? And I said, well, we're investigators. We punt. And so Don was with me that night, and he goes, I'm not scared of that thing. So, George, we're in the middle of the woods, and I'm going, up 20, over 2, you know, trying to get him into the vicinity of this entity. And he got right up on it, and the thing continued to try to signal to us until eventually it
took off. We're going to come back in a moment and talk about some missing time cases, some peaking aliens, whatever they may be, and more. Then we'll take calls next on Hour on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to take your UFO calls and stories with Angelia next hour on Coast to Coast AM, so make sure you're continuing to stay awake and you're part of the program. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, back with Angelia Scheer. Angelia, how many people say Angelica?
Oh, gosh, I get Angelina, Angelica, I get it all.
The mind plays tricks.
When you see
your name typed out, you want to say Angelica, but it's Angelia.
Angelia, that's exactly right.
All right, so let's talk about the missing time cases with some captured audio called The Strange Case of Witness.
Yeah, George, that's one of my favorite cases. Probably it's been almost 4 years we've been working with this case. And I remember the first day that it came across my report board. And I knew there's a phenomenon that happens. You've heard of buyer's remorse. There's also reporter's remorse.
Mm-hmm.
People will make a report and then they'll lose their nerve. And I was worried about this one. The case came in that the person had been out in their barn, and it's more like a huge storage shed where tractors, that kind of thing. And what the basic story was, the witness had moved home. This was a military family. The father had died. The mother, George, I love this mother. The mother's in her 70s, and she carries a weapon with her everywhere she goes.
Wow. Annie Oakley.
Yep, she cannot be coerced. This is why this is such a strong case. So the son decided to move home and help, do inventory, start to close down the property. The mom wanted to sell the property and move back home down south. So it was early April, still cool, had a jacket on. He was out in this outbuilding, pretty big. You have to, if everybody could visualize it, it's kind of a rectangle with the big double garage doors at one end, a side door on the side. And, you know, you could put a couple of cars in there, tractor and all kinds of tools. So he was in there inventorying, going through his father's, you know, tools, that kind of thing. And earlier, he had found a little nest of baby birds, and he had run the mother off. This is important. It's funny how these little synchronistic events affect things. And he didn't want them to die, so he'd been trying to feed them and keep them alive. So he took out his phone, and he took a little video of these baby birds, and he thought, you know, I'm going to – him and his mom would have coffee in the morning, and, you know, he said, I'm going to show her video. She could walk out there, but, you know, it's just something to talk about over coffee. So he takes the phone out, he videos it, and then he thinks he turns the phone off. And then he said, Angela, I had the strangest feeling to just go to the side door of the barn. And he walks over to the side of this building. There's a big work table there, heavy work table. He takes his phone out of the pocket, lays it down upside down on the table. Then he takes his sidearm out. He's a military. This guy sleeps with his weapon. You know, he said that's the first thing that was unusual.
Right.
He puts his sidearm down. And he opens the door, and he sees a bright flash of bluish-white light. Well, the next thing that he realizes, he wakes up, and he's laying on his back. And he has no idea where he is. You know, he's starting to come back to consciousness, and he sees this line above him. Well, it ends up being the eave of the house. He was about 80 feet away from the barn, laying on his back. He's completely, you know, disoriented. He's got his keys are broken apart off of his key ring. Some are in one hand, some are in the other. And his jacket is pulled down around his body, almost like he's been restrained by it. So, you know, he's... You know, I can't describe enough the confusion that my witnesses go through that have had this missing time phenomenon. So eventually gets himself up. He has no idea, you know, how much time has passed at this point. You know, he's really worried. It's like, what's happened to me? He goes, Ange, I had a beer or so. You know, I wasn't drinking it, you know, because I questioned those things. He goes inside, and he goes into his mother's room, and she's, what's another strange thing, she's kind of propped up in the bed, and they have this, George, they have this big, beautiful dog, and the dog was even silent, laying on the bed with mom. So he starts kind of, you know, calling her, you know, to wake up, even though she's kind of partially sitting up, propped up on the pillows. And she said, oh, okay, she comes to consciousness, and she goes, what's wrong, what's wrong? He goes, I don't know, you know, can you tell me what time it is? And she looks over, and she said, well, it's a little bit after 3. Well, George, the last time he remembers for sure, it was like 11:30. So he's got 2.5 to 3 hours of missing time. And at that point, you know, the frustration has built, the fear has built, and he, you know, he just kind of explodes for a moment. He actually threw his keys across the room, and he's, because he doesn't know what's happened. Well, now mom is up. You know, she's a professional woman. You know, she was a military contractor, that kind of thing. And she's really concerned because the first thing she thinks is, well, my son's been accosted. You know, even though they live out in a rural area in a farm, she comes over to him and she said, you know, what's happened? Let me, you know, call the sheriff's department. You know, are you okay? She thought maybe he'd been knocked unconscious.
Right.
He said, no, 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 no. And this is what's incredible, the first thing about this case. She said, let me look at you. She actually had him take his shirt off, and she starts taking pictures. He looks like he's got a restrain mark around his chest. He has these burn marks around the back of his ears. He's got this grid pattern on his head, and she's taking pictures of all this, which is incredible. I mean, this has just happened. This never happens. This is one in a million. So anyway, you know, again, he's agitated. He's thirsty. He's actually craving salt. You know, we find some of these common denominators in these, you know, cases. And so eventually they, you know, start to calm each other down. And he goes and eats. And he, you know, they finally go on back to bed. Well, one thing I forgot, she looks at him and she said, where is your phone and your sidearm? And he goes, well, I guess it's still out in the barn. This is part of love. She's in her bathrobe in her 70s. She goes, I'll get my gun and cover you. Let's go back out.
And
here.
Cover you.
I'm going to cover you, you know. So they tromp back out, you know, to the barn that's just a little ways away from the house. And, you know, his gun and his cell phone were there. So they get the weapon, they get the phone, they come back in, and they go to sleep. Well, again, this, you know, this is a working farm, so the next day, you know, he doesn't think about it. He looks at his phone, and it's completely dead. And so he just plugs it in, goes to bed, tries to calm down. He gets up the next day, goes out, gets on the tractor, you know, working. So he really doesn't look at his phone until he comes in for dinner, and this is where, you know, the story really starts. So he, after, you know, he got his phone, like all of us do, and, you know, he's going through it. Well, he remembered the video that he took, and he said, oh, I got to show you the video of the little baby birds. Well, George, when he played that video back, when he thought he turned the video off, he didn't. And the phone was still running. Even though it was upside down, he captured about 2 hours and 20 minutes of the scariest audio you've ever heard.
Whoa.
And so for years now... my honey's a country music singer, so we have access to engineers in the music realm. We've, you know, I've probably listened to this audio for 2 years with headphones. And George, it's some of the best evidence I've ever seen. You hear him moaning throughout the audio. We've boosted it. You know, you hear him. You know, you hear all this, and then toward the end, I actually have a smaller clip of it that I use on lectures. You hear what sounds like, I mean, you hear multiple voices, female voices, and then you hear a voice that, and I can't do it very well, George, but it goes, I mean, it sounds like a non-human voice in a language structure.
Coming from an ET, you believe?
We don't know, but it was something paranormal.
It also sounds kind of demonic, doesn't it?
It was, well... You know, again, you know, I tell people I've been doing this a long time, and, you know, I can tell you patterns, and I can report to you the facts, but it was something very strange. So when he heard that, everything changed. He had called us, and so we did set up an investigation. It was probably a couple of weeks after the incident. I wish it had been sooner. We went out there on a Friday, and we spent the whole day. We took a lot of photographs, interviewed both witnesses, separated them. You know, their testimonies were, you know, right in line. And what was most interesting to me, I've got a nursing background, and, you know, with my training in trauma, which is really important in this phenomena, the dissociative aspects of what happened with people. When we sat down in his office and he pulled up the audio for us to listen to, he completely changed. You know, his pupils dilated, he flushed up his chest, his hands started shaking. You know, he had a post-traumatic response just to listening to the audio again. And I knew something happened to this man. Whatever it was, something really happened to him. And after that, over the next days and weeks and months, this family was bombarded with activity. They, since they're well-to-do, they bought a high-end security system in the house. And thank goodness, I mean, they turned into great researchers. One thing that I've seen with my witnesses, George, and I'm sure you know, after these things, many of them, they become obsessed with this. They read everything they can.
Oh, yeah.
They listen
dive
to
right
you,
in
you know,
it. Sure.
Constantly, you know, trying to find answers. And over that period of time, I mean, I have, and he sent it to me, it's part of my lecture, in one of the videos, it shows this self-illuminating orb. It's not a dust mote. Self-illuminating, pulsing, going through the living room of the house, just as clear as day, and out the window, and you see the witness standing down there, and he's talking. And I said, Jay, I said, call him Witness Jay. I said, Jay, what were you doing? He said, Ange, I just had a feeling to get up and go down there at that moment. This happened so many times. I tell my witnesses, trust your instincts. You know, after that, he caught a video of a low-level UFO over the house, and the thing is just blinking. It's not a normal, it's not an airplane, it's stationary, it's not a drone. And so after that, just as in my book describes, so many paranormal components broke out around this case after that.
Is that unusual?
No, that's very common. I mean, so many of my witnesses, you know, I said in my book after, you know, having common denominators, my witnesses usually fall into two categories. Either they've had strange events from the time they were born, or they have one singular event. Let's say in my case, since I'm a UFO researcher, they'll have a close-range UFO sighting, some kind of event, missing time, and then all heck breaks loose. It's almost like their neuroanatomy has been rewired from that experience, and they start perceiving all of these other anomalous experiences.
Pretty dramatic. Now, the cover of your book, UFO Encounters, of course, deals with the so-called peaking aliens. What's that all about?
Well, that was another incredible case. I had a young man contact me, and he reported that he was probably in his late 20s at the time he called. And he talked about that when he was around 13 years old, this was over in East Tennessee also, we have a lot of activity there, that he was raised on a farm. His mother lived on the farm, other family members, they shared the farm. His father was not present, so his mother worked a lot. And he said, you know, Ange, I really had a great childhood. I love my childhood. So on the weekends, his mother would work and he would stay at a family member's house. And so he said, I'm pretty sure it was a Saturday night. He's around 13 or so. He said, I know I took a shower and I went, it was a small house. I'm sure everybody's familiar with the kind of salt box house, you know,
sure,
where it's got the three little bedrooms in the back and everybody can visualize the hallway down the middle.
Little living room and kitchen, and that's about it.
Exactly. Yeah. He said he was back in the back. He took a shower, went back in the back bedroom, and he kept his toys in these milk crates. And he said, Angie, I remember it so perfectly. I picked up one of the milk crates, and I went to go back down the hall, and he happened to, you know, look out in one of the bedroom windows, and there was this, looked like an alien creature looking in the window. And not only was there one, two more showed up. Now, George, I want you to imagine this, my audience. This kid's 13 years old, and these things are looking in the window, and one of them would, he said it was so strange the way it would turn its head. It would look at him, and then it would turn its head, let's say, to the right, like it was looking at something else, and then turn its head back. And so he said, I don't know if I was just frozen from fear or if they were affecting me somehow, but he said I couldn't move for a second. And finally, I got so terrified that I actually was able to break free, and he ran down in the hall, and the family members were actually in watching TV. He said, I remember they were watching a baseball game, Atlanta Braves. You know, that's how my witnesses' memories are so, they're so traumatic in these experiences.
Yeah.
They can remember these pieces. And he started yelling, you know, hey, there's something in the window. There's something in the window. And, George, this is where this happens so many times. It gets interesting, and it's the tell. The family member got up, shut the blinds, and turned the TV up. Now, everybody knows we're in the South. This is where everyone has a weapon. If, you know, most farmers, you know, especially older people, if they suspected somebody was on their property that shouldn't be, you know what they would do. They'd, you
Oh,
know, they'd take their
absolutely.
gun and go out and look. That didn't happen.
Annie Oakley be chasing them too.
That's exactly right. So that didn't happen. So that, and of course, you know, when he was young, he didn't think about it. But as he got older, he said, you know, Ange, that was really strange, wasn't it? I said, absolutely. I said, that happens a lot. You know, that makes me suspect that other people there, you know, were aware of this phenomena, but, you know, they weren't going to discuss it. So this young man, I was so, George, I was so taken with his sincerity. You know, he opened up to me. He actually uses his name in my book. Some of my witnesses remained anonymous. You know, some wanted their names put in there. They said it was
Sure.
time for people to know. And then after the book was published, a lot of anonymous people came forward and said, that's my story in the
Yeah,
book.
all
So,
right, they
you
admitted
know,
it.
they wanted it to be out there. But, you know, his sincerity, he said, you know, Ange, there's something else I want to tell you. And I said, okay, what is it, honey? And he said, well, I have kind of a little bit of anxiety. And he goes, I don't take medication and I went to therapy and, you know, we couldn't find anything wrong. And finally, you know, the therapist told him, said, you know, well, maybe you're just stressed out from work. And he said, Ange, I work in a warehouse. My work is not stressful. And so, you know, I kind of talked to him and I said, well, you know, that event that happened to you when you were 13, that's pretty powerful. That happens to so many of my witnesses that after these events, they do have this post-traumatic stress. So anyway, after that, even though he's in his 20s now, and that happened when he was 13, I was so taken with his sincerity. I told the team, I said, you know, let's just put together a team. We don't have anything to do this weekend. Let's just go down there and retrace the steps, you know, of this case. And you know, George, we weren't expecting, you know, anything. We were just going to have an outing. We had some new equipment, new drones. We were going to go test
Hold on for a
everything.
second, Angelia. We'll pick up the retracing portion of the story, and we'll take calls next hour on Coast to Coast AM.